Episode 131 of the podcast. This week, we'll talk about appropriate ways for dogs to show us, tell us, or express to us that they don't like something, are uncomfortable, and or want us to stop. The truth is that dogs need a safe way to communicate that, and we need to know how to respond. You're listening to the Creating Great Grooming Dogs podcast. I'm Chrissy Neumeyer-Smith. I'm a certified professional groomer, a certified behavior consultant for canines, a certified professional dog trainer, and the owner of Happy Critters in Nashua, New Hampshire. And this, my friends and colleagues, is the podcast where grooming and training meet. In episode 130, I shared three questions to ask owners that will help you assess a dog's behavior and to get a feel for what could go wrong. I follow that up with how it relates to your safety talk with owners and your safety policy. Now, if you didn't hear that episode, go back and listen after this one, then you'll be all caught up. You don't need to listen to them in order. No problem there. The three questions are, what does your dog do when they don't like something? What does your dog do when they want you to stop? And what does your dog do if you don't stop? So those are the three questions that we pondered in episode 130, the last episode, and that we're going to continue on today. So this week, I want to talk more about what nice and safe responses may look like, because dogs will have things that they don't like to do. I know that seems really obvious, right, now that I'm saying it out loud. Yeah, there's going to be things that they don't like. And we tend to think that a good dog is a dog who's always happy or loves everything. I feel that there's another layer to the good dog, and I think that that's a dog who can safely express their discomfort. And we need to think about safety. We need to think about, how is this dog going to tell me if they're uncomfortable? And there are safe ways to do that. I'm going to use my own dogs as examples, my own guys. So Brock, he came to me as a 7-month-old border collie who loves being touched, held. Any contact with people, doing anything was great. All right. Sometimes it was too great because he would become overstimulated and way too playful. And he was so desperate for play and wrestling when I first got him that he would become frantic, like a grabby little shark. Not liking something was never our problem. What he really had problems with was that he didn't want me to stop. He would get even sillier and the wrestling and the mouthing would increase because, oh my God, someone's finally paying attention to me. Someone's touching me. Things are awesome. Again, 7 months old. And some of his background is that he spent 2 months just living in a run, chewing on chain link. So he didn't have a whole lot of interesting things going on for the 2 months before I got him. What did he do if I didn't stop? That'd be more of the same. Just chewing, crazy, silly, over the top. Now, if we think about that, that's before training, of course. But that's a guy that I could always trust him. He was always being really pretty safe. His play was a little bit frantic, but nothing too crazy. For someone who really likes crazy high-drive border collies, it was nothing too crazy. For someone who has a crazy high-drive Malinois, it was probably something really sedate. But for someone who has Bichons, it was probably wildly crazy. It's very subjective. That's what I started off as my baseline. Now, do I have calm, comfortable, and cooperative? If I run it through the idea of calm, comfortable, and cooperative, did we have calm? No. Nope, not even close. Did we have comfortable? Yes. Yes, we did. He was really comfortable with anything I wanted to do. Any tool, any time, doesn't matter. Being touched is epic. He was comfortable with it. Did we have cooperative? Now, that's the tricky part. Because his level of activity and his playful responses made it really hard for him to cooperate with what I was doing. So when we run it through the calm, comfortable, and cooperative lens, which I think is really helpful for most of us. So if you're a first time listening to the podcast, that's something I drill in pretty often. Calm, comfortable, and cooperative is what our goal should be. So I had to teach him to calm down so that that comfort can also become cooperative. Now, his adult response to anything that he doesn't want to do or that he doesn't want me to continue doing or that he would like for me to stop, his responses now at this stage in his life are to cower, maybe gently pull his foot a little bit, maybe try to block what I'm doing by moving his head in between to kind of look at me. I think that those are really, really safe ways of saying, hey, I am uncomfortable with this. Now, part of why that happens is because I will back off if a dog gives me those little signals like, hey, I'm uncomfortable. I will try to restore comfort to get them comfortable again. And that might be letting go of a foot for a moment, or putting the tool down and kind of massaging a foot, or getting the dryer away from their ear and doing something else for a moment. That might be a variety of things. One of the things I will tell you from Brock's point of view that I have found with him is that if I'm doing his nails, it really makes a difference what kind of flooring or mat or table he is on. It makes a big, big difference. So if I go to grind his nails in my kitchen, which I usually do, I'll call him over to a rug, because then my little guy isn't slipping around while one foot's up. And it makes the biggest difference in the world. But we need to be thinking about, are we encouraging calm, comfortable, and cooperative? And if a dog gives us a really subtle signal, like just a little bit of pulling away, or just a little bit of wiggling, or a little bit of cowering, are we addressing calm, comfortable, and cooperative in that moment? Not the moment when it becomes difficult for us as groomers to get the job done, but when it becomes difficult for the dog. And that's why it's really important for us to know how to respond when we see things that we like better. That little bit of, what if I cower? Okay, I'm going to try to calm you down again. Now, I will say that same dog, as an adult, will let you do anything. Anything, 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 anything. But sometimes he's really sensitive about it. And that's when you have to kind of look and go, okay, what's going on that made you kind of sensitive right now? Because that's not usually you. You're not usually my sensitive guy. So I want you to think about the training process is part of this calm, comfortable, and cooperative. So anytime you're starting to see things like a dog that's cowering a little bit or pulling away, we as groomers tend to think I can get this done. I can still get it done. But that's not the point. And that's really not the mission in that moment. It's not about, can I get this done right now? It's about, how can I help build the behavior that I want for the next 15 years? Let's talk about my other guy. So Poe, completely different type of responses. Poe came to me as a 2-year-old border collie. He was almost 3, who loves people. Loves people. People are awesome, loves people, but had no idea why anyone would touch a dog past their shoulders. Why would anyone do that? It was like the weirdest thing in the world. Pet me, pet me, pet me, pet me, pet me. Love me, love me, love me, love me. But like, whoa, someone touched my hip. What the heck is happening, right? So what would he do? What did he do if he didn't like something? Well, he would try to move away. He tried to jump, twist, dart away. Like if he was on a leash, he would try to like, no, oh, I'm just going to get out of that space. I'm just going to try to get away from you. Okay. When we couldn't get away, because he was on a leash or on a table, if he couldn't get away, his next move was he would muzzle punch. If we continued even beyond that, he would struggle to try to break free. Again, that's before training. So what's a muzzle punch? For those of you who are not familiar with that term, muzzle punch is when a dog does a fast turn and hits you with their mouth closed. And I think it's something you often see with the herding breeds. I don't think I've seen it in dogs that aren't herders, but I think it's probably a herding technique that is just something that we selected for over time. My take on it is that it's a way of saying, hi, I'm choosing not to bite you, but I could have. And I know that's really anthropomorphic, but for me, it's the best way to describe what I have observed, because it's about speed and making you back off, which really is, in many, many ways, a big part of the herding job. Like, okay, I'm going to be fast and intimidating. So he would muzzle punch, which means his mouth would be totally closed and I felt 100% safe, but man, is he fast. And a muzzle punch, you know, bam, and your hand gets moved, right? Or not usually a muzzle punch to the face, but I have seen herding dogs that do that. It was more toward whatever tool you were using or your hand. Like, get that thing away from me. Now, that's before training. And I want you to think about that like dogs have these responses like, I need you to stop something, or I'm not comfortable with something. And if we don't stop, what are they going to do? Now, That's what I started with, but that's not what he's like now. So now, at this point, he does a lot of what I described with my other dog, which is, hey, I'm a little nervous. And he gives me that little bit of cowering, you know, or just a little bit of slowing down his motions, a little bit of lowering his head. Think about some of these things that we commonly see that we're like, well, he's still being good, so I'm going to keep pushing and doing my job. I'm not here to judge if we do that or not, but I want you to think about, we have an opportunity to help them be more comfortable. And in that magical moment, we can make a decision about, can I help you be more comfortable with the thing that I'm doing right now? We can also make a decision, is what I'm doing right now something that can be broken down into smaller steps? And is something that I'm doing right now something that needs to be done right now? Or can we work on it? So I'm going to give you a couple of examples. One is a dog that I was working with who's super, super silly and a puppy, that one of these little puppies that just like screams and is overdramatic. And that's how the puppy started. But now I don't want to just go straight to I'm holding your leg to I'm brushing your leg. We can make some steps in between because this is not an emergency. And this is an owner who's on board with, I want my dog to do better. I want my dog to learn how to be good for this. And we're all committed to working on this dog to help this dog be good for a lifetime of grooming. So instead of going from I'm holding your leg to I'm brushing your leg, it's I'm holding your leg. And now I'm holding a brush on your leg. And that's a half step. Okay, here's a brush. Here's your leg, holding your leg, holding a brush to your leg. Like there's lots of ways that we can break things down and build on, oh, I'm comfortable with that. Because I'm not perfect. I made the mistake of holding leg and then trying to brush leg, and that was not going to happen. So in that moment, I said, oh, Chrissy, you have taken it too far. Let's backtrack. So I backtracked. I am holding your leg. Look, I'm holding a brush. Look, I'm holding a brush against your leg. And then it went to, I'm holding a brush against your leg. And just did a couple of repetitions of like, now I'm holding your leg. Now I'm holding a brush against your leg. A couple of repetitions. And then now I'm holding your leg. Now I'm holding a brush against your leg. Now I'm brushing your leg. And the puppy was very different for that second round of trying to brush the leg than the first one that I took too soon before the puppy was ready. And that's why I'm trying to explain it here. For us all to start thinking, there's a moment that we have where we can say, do I need to do it right now? Can I make this into smaller portions? Can I make this easier? Am I listening for when this dog is uncomfortable, and can I make it more comfortable? If this dog just needs to be calmer and is actually comfortable, can I help them be calm? If this dog is cooperating with me but isn't comfortable, can I help them be comfortable anyway? Because really, we want them to be calm, comfortable, and cooperative. All three. All three are really important. Because I don't want them to just cooperate with me and also think that it's terrifying. And we see that sometimes with dogs who stiffen and bristle and are just frozen in fear. And they'll let you do anything because they're just, it's almost like they're just waiting for something terrifying to end. So I want you to think about that in those examples. Again, my own personal dogs. But what I started with and what I have now are very different. And then I also built up beyond what I think they're going to have to deal with. And that's something that from a dog training point of view, we do an awful lot of. But dog owners and other dog pros, not necessarily. But it's almost like you want to overtrain for something that's crazier than what the world might throw at you. So, like, I taught my guys how to wear a muzzle. I don't think my guys are ever going to need to be muzzled, but you know what? I'd rather them know how to. That's just putting money aside for a rainy day. And why not? They're like, okay, cool. I'll put on a muzzle. You know, my dogs know how to wear harnesses. They know how to wear leashes. They know how to have all sorts of things put on them. They know how to be picked up. They know how to be put on tables. They know how to be lifted into cars and out of cars, even though they don't need that at this age and this stage in their life. Right now, they can do the jumping on their own, but I don't want to have to teach them when they're elderly what it is to be picked up. So there are lots of things that we can plan for and make easier. If you're enjoying this podcast, please remember to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes and tell all of your friends. I had a conversation with a neighbor this week, and I'm going to relay this to you guys because I think that this happens quite a bit. My neighbor said to me, my son brought his dog someplace, blah, 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 groomer, to get the nails done. And they said, well, has your dog ever had a bath? And he said, no. So they're like, oh, well, how about we do a bath too? We have time for that today. And he's like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then he went to pick up the dog and the bath was done, but they weren't able to do a nail trim. And he feels really kind of cheated. So as groomers, we're all guessing what's happening. But think about that from our customer service angle. He feels like he asked for something and got like the bait and switch. Like suddenly we're telling him we're all out of nail trims, which, okay, certainly, if you haven't heard me talk about it before, but keep in mind, everything we do is a service and not a product. It's not a product. It's not something we have a box of or a can of or a bag of that we can sell. It's a service. So I was talking to my neighbor, and this is her son who had gone through this. So it sounds to me like they had problems getting the nails done and maybe didn't describe that well. And she's like, well, I mean, how much problem could they have? I'm like, really? So I'm like, well, you know, for safety reasons, they might not have been able to finish the nail trim. She says, well, safety. And, you know, this is a very intelligent average owner. This isn't her dog. It's her son's dog. But she's had dogs in the past. She's like, so what do you mean by safety? I mean, I suppose she could bite. And that's where most people jump in. They start thinking in terms of could bite. And I said to her, I'm like, or could twist her leg, hurt her knee, break a bone, twist her neck, flailing around trying to get out of someone's grip. And then she was like, oh, that can happen? Yeah, it can happen. And sadly, the thing is that I'm sure this dog gave the groomers a hard time or had a hard time with the groomers. Because again, the dogs aren't giving us a hard time. They're having a hard time. Something that I have to remind myself of. Well, clearly, because I made the mistake here. But something that I have to remind myself of often, too. The dogs are having a hard time. So she had to think about it like, oh, yeah, so a dog that's having a hard time is a safety risk. Huh. And I know that that groomer, if they had explained it differently, or maybe they didn't get a chance to explain it at all, would have been able to help that owner understand. He wouldn't have walked away feeling cheated. And instead, I think that we kind of forget that the average Joe has no idea what we do. They really have no idea. They don't know what it takes to do a nail trim. They have no expectations about how long it would take. They still don't usually know how quicks grow or what a quick is, if they even know the word the quick. They're kind of just hoping that they can buy a nail trim. Much like I dropped my car off for a brake job today. Hey, well, I dropped it off. Like if they told me we couldn't get the brakes done today, I'd be like, what do you mean you couldn't get the brakes done? I think that sometimes owners of dogs are almost like car owners, thinking that it's a supply and demand kind of a thing, or like, oh, we don't have enough of those things. Like, no, we always have enough nail trimming. But sometimes your dog is not behaving in a way that is safe. But I want you to think too, as a groomer, if we can express to an owner, hey, you know what? Your dog was having a hard time with that today, and give them some solutions. Don't just leave him hanging, because I also worry that he's going to feel like, well, now what do? I guess I go someplace else, you know? And that's how we end up with dogs that get bounced back and forth and forth and back and forth, you know? Well, no one can get his nails done. And you hear that, no one can get his nails done. Well, what have you done to work on that? Why should I have to work on it? Well, because you're the dog's owner. You live with him. You should be working on it. But no one has even ever thought to tell them about dog training. So as an industry, we also have to educate our owners, much like we do with things like mats, right? We talk to owners about mats and tangles. We can talk to owners about behavior. and why we can't always give a customer exactly what they want, but we're going to try to. We're going to try. Maybe I won't be able to save that tail and take all the mats out, but I can try if you're willing to pay the money for me to try that. Maybe we can't get the nails all done today because your dog is having a really hard time, but maybe we can do more frequent nail trimming exercises and you can work on it at home, and in the future we'll be able to if you're willing to put in the time and the effort and the money. So we need to talk to our owners and help them with some solutions, because otherwise we're just leaving them hanging. I really think he walked away feeling like, great, so now the nails aren't done. That's the only thing I wanted to buy. I wanted to buy a nail trim, and they wouldn't sell me a nail trim. And that's kind of sad. That's not helping him. That's not helping his dog. It's not helping the grooming business that he went to either, because I'm sure they're awesome. I'm sure they're lovely. They just didn't express it well. And expressing this stuff to owners is what's going to make change happen. If we talk to our owners, we can help them make these changes. If you'd like more information, you can find me at chrissy@happycritters.net, happycrittersdogtraining.com, or you can join the Facebook group, Creating Great Grooming Dogs podcast, or the Facebook page, Creating Great Grooming Dogs. I really look forward to hearing from you.